This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
All right, so last night on the Yankee game in the seventh inning, we had Dr. Philip Oswa, the president of Montefiore Medical Center, come on. And Peter and Don, I was a little worried because it's such a polarizing topic for some reason. It's become a political football rather than just a health issue. And the doctor, and you'll hear him, he's going to join us in a moment, was so charming and so informative that I have never on social media seen total unanimity that I'm glad that you guys had him on because he really helped educate us. And I think that came from some people that were skeptics as well. So I said, we've got to get the doctor on the radio show today. So here he is, Dr. Philip Oswa, the president of Montefiore Medical Center. Doc, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. Thank you for last night, and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you very much, Michael. It was nice to be with you last night, and thank you, Don and Peter.
Now, Doc, first things first. So the Yankees and the coaching staff got vaccinated last night, right before an off day. Was it hard to convince everybody on the team and the coaching staff to do it, or did they want to do it? Did you have to assuage some of their fears?
We did a little bit of that, but actually I must say that the Yankee organization itself did most of the work. They had informed the players. They worked with the players, and so by the time we came in, there was an overwhelming majority of people who wanted to obtain the vaccines and be protected. So our job was mostly to administer the vaccines to them in the most efficient way possible.
Okay, so the next question for you, and it's not even about the Yankees, it's about overall, when you're dealing with the people of New York City, what is the greatest fear about taking the vaccine?
Right. You know, Michael, there are a lot of myths out there. There are a lot of rumors. They include things like the vaccine may alter my DNA. I may actually get COVID-19 itself from the vaccine. It will cause infertility. It's not for people that look like me. And the vaccine was rushed. And so I can't really trust it because it was rushed. What people fail to appreciate, Michael, is that these vaccines are the result, they're a testament to decades of meticulous research and then a rigorous clinical trial involving tens of thousands of diverse patients in many countries. You know, for example, at our place, the Albert Einstein Medical School, we have scientists that have dedicated their entire careers to decoding viruses such as this, preparing for the day when a pathogen skips from the animal kingdom into humans, and thereby ensuring that science will be ready when such a thing occurs. So it may have seemed like this vaccine came about rather fast to people, but that was because there have been scientists, researchers toiling away day and night for 30 years decoding these viruses.
So the fact that it was quote-unquote rushed or used for emergency use, people shouldn't get hung up on that.
Absolutely not. I mean, there's decades of clinical research on the mRNA technology, its safety, its efficacy in different models, beginning with small animal models to larger animal models. And of course, these present vaccines went through rigorous clinical trials, phase one, phase two, phase three, in many countries with tens of thousands of patients from different backgrounds. So the answer is that the production of the vaccines seemed fast, but the work that went into developing them was decades in the making.
as a man of science, is it frustrating to you, Dr. Oswald, that this has become a political issue that seems to be split and polarized almost along conservative or liberal lines? Does that frustrate you?
To some extent, yes. I think it was unfortunate that COVID-19 hit the U.S. in a presidential election year. And unfortunately, the talk on both sides of the aisle about the timing of the vaccine coming to the public made it seem like it was a political issue. There was a question of would it be done before the November elections or after the November elections. So what ended up happening was that we threw a level of distrust on top of what was a baseline anxiety. Remember, this is a new disease that human beings have never seen before. So there's a great deal of anxiety and concern about this virus that people had. And now you throw in a political dimension to it. I must add, though, that some of the hesitancy that we're seeing are on both sides of the aisle. There are people on the one end who are very much into personal choice, and that might drive the hesitancy. And there are people on the other end who don't trust the process of the making of the vaccines and think that it may not be for people like them.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What confuses me a little bit, Doctor, is you've got three different vaccines out there, but they're all different. Johnson & Johnson is one dose, Moderna and Pfizer are two doses, but there's a different time between the doses, and some are stored differently. How come it's not universally the same? Why are they completely different when they're all trying to do the exact same thing?
Right. That's a very good question. And the answer is simply because they're made by different companies. This is part of part of free enterprise, and each of these, when these research and clinical trials are being done, each group develops and designs its own research. For example, the fact that the Pfizer vaccine is given on day one and day 21 to 28, and the Moderna is giving a month after the first dose is simply because that was how the scientists designed the experiment when they went into the clinical trial. It may very well be, and we'll find out over time, that the Pfizer is just as effective given 1 month later, and the Moderna is just as effective given 3 weeks later. These are just, if you will, artifacts of the design that the scientists put into place. What people were trying to do was to set up clinical trials that had the greatest chances of showing if this vaccine was effective and knowing that millions of people were dying worldwide the longer we waited.
Will these vaccines, Dr. Oswald, will they be effective against the variants that are showing up?
The answer is, so far, they are. And there's plenty of evidence to support the fact that if you vaccinate a large population within your area, the variants are less of a problem. You look at Israel and some parts of the U.S. What ought to be understood is that viruses mutate all the time, over time, and in fact, many times when viruses mutate, they actually become weaker and less lethal. And there's a simple reason for this. Viruses can only live inside our body, inside of the cells. They can't actually live outside. So if a virus continues to mutate and get more and more lethal and kills off all of its hosts, it ends up killing off itself. And so just to survive, after a while, viruses tend to mutate and become weaker. So in the long run, I do believe that science will prevail over the variants.
Doctor, how long will these vaccinations last?
Good question. We don't know yet. The answer is we don't know, because the first people that got vaccinated were about early last year. And so we know from the ongoing monitoring that many of them are still protected. So if I were to guess, I would say it's at least a year, because if that's not the case, then the very first N release in the clinical trial early last year would be showing signs now that would require a second dose. But we don't know is the simple answer. That question is being looked at carefully, and we will know every year that goes by.
Dr. Philip Oswald, the president of Montefiore Medical Center, is our guest. We sat in the stadium yesterday, and we looked out of a crowd of about 10,000. So my question to you, Doc, when do we see 50,000 there? When do we see people able to gather in big, large gatherings and not have to worry about wearing masks? Is that in our future, or are we going to become a forever mask community?
I believe that the return to normalcy, Michael, is in our future. And the path is through the vaccines. That, at the moment, is the only path. Because mitigation measures, social distancing, isolation, shutting everything down, slows down the spread, but it doesn't make the virus go away. And the moment that you reopen, things tend to pick up again if you do nothing else. At the rate that the United States is going, there is every reason to believe that by the autumn, we should be returning much closer to normal than we've been in 18 months or so.
Doctor, why the back and forth, with the CDC and on the idea about whether, if you're vaccinated, you can in fact carry and spread the virus anyway? It seems like the CDC came out and said, no, that's not the case. Then they said, yes, it is the case. What's the cause for sort of the confusion on that?
Right. I think, I can completely understand why people get confused about that, because these guidelines evolve the more knowledge that we have. So when you have the first people vaccinated in clinical trials, it's tens of thousands. As you start to vaccinate more people in the millions, you don't know for a fact if what you saw with tens of thousands will still hold with the millions. And so as you learn more, you issue more and more informed guidelines. The principle, though, is this, and if you look at the CDC guidelines, the earliest ones are the most cautious until more information arrives, and then they become more and more liberalized. And that's the right approach in science. That's generally the approach that we adopt as scientists.
All right, final thing. You don't seem like a guy that could get angry. You seem so level-headed. But do you get angry, doctor, when you hear people say, I don't believe it, I'm not taking it, there could be a chip in there to monitor? I mean, there's so many conspiracies about it. Do you get angry when you hear this as a scientist that there are people that actually believe that this is something that is bad, or this is something that they don't need, and that they're just going to ride it out without a vaccine?
The answer is no. You know, my job is to understand why people are hesitant. I mean, I said this last night. I've been in medicine for over four decades, and many of those decades was as a pediatrician. And so, and guess where most vaccines are given? In pediatrics. And over the last 30, 40 years, dozens of new vaccines have been introduced to safeguard young ones against deadly viruses. And every time that a new vaccine was introduced, there was often some hesitancy amongst parents. And so this is something that we've dealt with. But over time, in the context of a trusted therapeutic relationship and with overwhelming scientific data, we work through this. So this, in some ways, frankly, is to be expected. There's been no vaccine that was discovered in medicine that was 100% accepted on day one. And we have to be patient as we continue to work with people to understand their fears.
You also said something yesterday that really caught my attention about, like, this was the big one. What do you say to people that say this is no different than the flu?
I would say I wish you were at Montefiore in March and April of last year and May of last year. We've had flu seasons here for decades and decades and decades. We have a morgue in this hospital that has never been one-tenth full. We increased the size of that morgue in one of the hospitals fivefold. And despite that, we had 700 bodies piled up in trucks outside the hospital waiting to be picked up. This was the big one. Easily transmissible, lethal enough. And the fact is that millions and millions of people have died worldwide. And if you saw the videos from Italy, from the U.S., and you see the suffering and the brutality of the death, you realize that this is real. This is not politics. And by the way, if you recall, there were countries that refused to shut down earlier, ideologically, politically, and guess what? They all ended up shutting down. Global pandemics of the once-in-a-100-year variety have a way of shutting everything down, no matter the ideology or politics of the government in power.
Doctor, thank you for all the work you've done. Thank you to the people that work with Montefiore and all the doctors and nurses out there that have helped steer this country through this. And thank you for illuminating us on what is obviously a life-changing issue, and we thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. And please allow me to wish you a very happy and successful summer of K. I understand you'll be taking golf lessons.
That's right. Yeah, that's so right. I'm locked in.
Go for it.
Maybe we'll golf one day.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Wow. That's chilling stuff. It really is. And, you know, I know there are people that don't like to hear that, but I thought that, you know, the tie-in that all the Yankees and all the coaches got that vaccinated when there are other teams that are fighting it, I thought that was newsworthy. And to just have this guy explain some of the things that are on people's minds, because, hey, people have every right to doubt. This is their life. This is their one life. You have the right to doubt these things, but when a guy like that takes the time to slowly and carefully explain it, I think it does bring some clarity.
And as one of our listeners said on Twitter, let's just be honest, I don't care what he's talking about. I could just listen to that guy talk all day. Like, he's just thoughtful, calm, even, and interesting. Every word that he said.
What
great
a gentleman.
Get, Michael Kay.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a brief time out. Got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I thought that was important for our listeners because we've told you 100 times, you are family, we love you, we want you to be safe and all that. So maybe some people learn something from that, maybe some people scoff at it, But when a guy like that talks with all the years of experience that he has, and he's a scientist, a doctor, I kind of tend to listen. They're in the top of the ninth inning at Citi Field, and the Marlins lead the Mets 2-1 at the home opener. So Edwin Diaz is on. Two outs, nobody on in the top of the ninth. So we'll be following that. We'll break it down once it's over as well. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.